Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of warriors.
Indeed they did, and still do, because I watch old cowboy shows as opposed to lawyer shows.
Well, you know
my lawyer show consists of Perry Mason.
that's as accurate and... You can't get any more accurate than that.
Did you ever give any thought to the prosecuting attorney who always went up, the white-haired guy who always went up against Perry Mason, never won one case?
Well, he won
one.
He did, yes. The prosecution did win one case.
He won one case.
It was the very last episode of Perry Mason, as far as I understand.
Wow. But, boy, that's great. William, can you imagine?
Yeah.
That was encouraging.
Yeah, I know.
Can you imagine every day you went to work going, well, I'm going to get my ass kicked again today. It's kind of like those guys, the Washington Generals, who used to play against the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bill Talman was the prosecutor. He did a number of westerns also.
Yeah.
And he did.
He's a good actor.
He was, and there was scandal about him in the 50s where he lost his job on the show for a while.
What was that?
Well, he got busted at a marijuana party.
Oh, yeah.
Without his pants on.
He was smoking marijuana without his pants.
That's what the report said. I don't know. So I know.
But that was worse than Robert Mitchell.
I hear you. Anyway, welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander Bunker de France, here in Tucson, in Los Angeles. It is our good friend Todd Roberts.
Hello.
And our guest for today is R.G. Yoho. He's a Western Writers of America author. He's coming to us from the coastline of Ohio with West Virginia.
Ohio River coastline. Sandy beaches.
Anyway, we're going to get to him in just a moment, but first of all, Bunker's got his his bovine stuff.
Well, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse is the good, the bad, and the bovine. Now, I'm sure Bob knows all about this, but I'm going to tell it anyway. We start with today. We go back 3 days into the past and 3 days into the future, but we don't go any days past this year, so it's kind of confusing.
And to say the least.
To start with, so speaking of confused, let's just start with April 22nd, 1876. Oh, this is for you, Harry.
Okay.
The Boston Red Caps beat the Philadelphia Athletics 6-5 in the first official National League baseball game played at Philadelphia, and it was there was a crowd of 3,000 people there.
You betcha, it was big stuff back then when baseball came out. I don't know if that's before Connie Mack's time or if he was there with the team there. Connie Mack was a great Philadelphia Athletic player.
Now, for the 23rd of April, this is also for you.
Oh, boy.
You're getting a doubleheader.
Hey.
This is 1940. Wrigley Field, then Wegman Park, hosted its first major league game, the Federals defeating Kansas City. More than 24,000 people crowded the stands, and 1,000 more viewed the game from houses, telephone poles, and trees in the area.
Yeah, that they did.
That's fans for you. Now, getting back
Nothing like Cub fans, I'll tell you.
now, getting back to the more mundane West, April 29, 1862, this is Civil War stuff here, the capture of New Orleans was a turning point in the Civil War that precipitated the capture of the Mississippi River. After fighting past Forts Jackson and St. Philip, the Union Army was unopposed in the capture of the city. April 30, that's the last day of April, in 1598, Juan de Onete y Salazar, Spanish conquistador, explorer, begins the conquest of Santa Fe de Nuevo Mexico, a province of the Spanish Empire and New Spain. Afterwards, being victorious, he became its viceroy. Mm-hmm. Now, moving into the month of May, and the first, that was May Day for all you commies, Calamity Jane, well, actually, she was born on that day, but her real name was Martha Jane Canary. She grew up to look like a man, shoot like a cowboy, drink like a fish, and exaggerate the tales of her life. And she was a distant friend of Wild Bill Hickok. I don't care what anybody says, they never had it. There was no hanky-panky there. Now, May 2nd, 1660, I like, this is my kind of history I like. Battle of Long Sault took place over a 10-day period from May 2nd to the 10th along the Ottawa River, involving a small French force led by Elan Dollard de Ormeaux. It consisted of 16 French militia and around 40 Huron and Algonquin allies. They aimed to ambush a much larger Iroquois force, estimated at 200 warriors. The battle ended with the French forces being decimated. You should know better than to mess with Frenchies and Indians.
They didn't run away.
When they got you outnumbered.
They didn't run away?
No. And you know, this is a very interesting battle, though, because they got there first. There was this old abandoned fort.
Mm-hmm.
They figured they'd get them in the crossfire. Well, that didn't work. So they were besieged, as you can tell. It lasted several days.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, they decided they had a plan. We're going to take a keg of gunpowder, we're going to put a fuse in it, and we're going to set it on fire and roll it down there and blow up them Frenchies. Well, guess what? Elon got himself blown up. He died there. End to him and his battle.
Right.
Now, May 3rd, 1830, first regular steam train this is for you again, Harry. Regular steam passenger service in the United States starts in South Carolina with U.S.-built locomotive, the best friend of Charleston. May 4, 1626, Dutch explorer Peter Minute arrives in New Netherland aboard the Seamu. It's a weird Dutch name for a ship. He later purchased Manhattan Island from the Lenape people.
Mm-hmm.
Little did he know, they didn't own it. And
no,
they walked away with a stash of beads.
I know. And still to this day, that somebody, whoever owned it, could come back and say, hey,
we got the deed.
We want the
land.
And
I'm going to finish up this week that was and wasn't. The 5th of May, which is a very, very important day. We've addressed this particular issue several times here on the show, but it's Red Dress Day. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to go out and put on a red dress, especially cowboys. But what it is it's a day of observance. They do it every year for the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous women and girls, also the boys, because they snatch up a lot of the young men too. And they do encourage the public to educate themselves on the history of the colonization of the American Indian. That's it. That was the week that wasn't.
All right.
Or won't be.
Or won't be. Never happened, never will. R.G. Yoho, welcome to Amo Franzi's Voices of the West. Glad to have you, sir.
Are you still awake?
Thank you. Good to be here.
I think this is your first time on the program, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is.
How did we miss you all these years? I do not know. But we were remiss, apparently. So, Western Rider of America member, you're living along the southern Ohio area there, along with the
great history,
the West Virginia line, state line. Yeah, lots of history there, back when that area was the West.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of history right around here. Yeah, it's, you know, like you say, at one point it was the West.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 50s, when I was really getting into reading, it seemed like everything I read was about the Ohio Valley.
Yeah.
It was cowboys and Indians, or I guess Bob's ancestors and Indians.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anywho, let's get on to what is going on with you. You got a new book It's an award winner, by golly, Destined to Ride Alone. That's your first young adult novel. And it's a 2026 Spur Award finalist in Best Western Juvenile Fiction. And so,
actually, it's a winner in juvenile fiction.
Yeah, it is. Congratulations on that, RG.
Well, thank you.
What prompted you to go start writing young adult stuff?
I don't know that I'll write any more, but I had an idea for a book about a kid coming west on the orphan train. And I just thought, you know, it's a lot of good history, a lot of things happened, you know, there that time, and the orphan train isn't really well known by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I just thought I'd make a good story. And yeah. I had my first grandson is just about the age of this boy. And, actually he was the first guy to read the manuscript where I found out if it was any good or not.
I bet he was a tough critic.
Oh, he isn't too bad. We call him the range boss because he got us started getting rid of all our Hereford Angus cattle, and we're raising longhorns now, Texas longhorns.
I was wanting to ask you about that.
That's interesting.
That you were starting to raise longhorns, and I seen one of your clips there where you're going, "Come here, Ferdinand! Come here, Ferdinand!" And that Ferdinand was not a longhorn. Do you still have him?
That was an Angus, and those all went down the road at the same time when we really got into trying to raise Texas Longhorns. Fact is, we had our first Texas Longhorn calf born on Yoho ground today.
Oh, wow. Cool. Wow. You know, I'm so glad you're doing that. You know, if you've never been out to the Autry Museum, they've got a longhorn stuffed in there. And that sucker, I stood next to it, and my head was below his withers. I mean, and the horns, they stretched out for a week.
You need two Cadillacs to be able to carry the horns on the hood.
They're a lot of fun. They're interesting. We're learning stuff all the time with them, though.
So what's different about them versus the Herefords? Obviously different breed, I understand that, but
there's a lot of things you got to do different with the fencing, you know.
Oh, I was just going to get to that,
Yeah, you see those round things where you put the large, the round bales in?
Yeah.
You can't use them because they get their heads caught in those things.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, not only that, they've never met a fence they couldn't go through.
Yeah.
You know, they get around pretty good.
Yeah. When they first come out with the electric fences, you know, they thought that would stop them, and all that did was give them a little tickle.
Yeah, electric fence didn't do much for a Hereford or Angus either.
If a cow's determined to go, it's going to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Todd Roberts, get in there.
So, Archie, do you prefer Archie or Bob?
Just call me Bob. RG is just it's just short for Robert George, and there was some Robert Yoho out there that was a doctor. It must have been smart one, probably not correct, probably distantly related to me, and so I use my initials and not my first name.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a ton of books out, and they're all bad. I mean, they're all medical crap.
So Bob, I hate to jump right into it with you, but how do you discover Charles Lively and the battles that he lived in?
Yeah.
Did and so on, and not to be contentious, but you know, we like to do that because we're always looking to piss somebody off. If it's not the guest, it's usually the audience. Where do you stand on the movie Mate One? How authentic is it? Not authentic? Is it a travesty? Is it a golden chalice? Give us the lowdown for us that are so ignorant.
The movie Mate One, I think, is a great film. Where I have problems with it is how it portrayed Charles E. Lively. Now, John Sayles, who did the film, it's great. And the way they got Charles Lively portrayed, they have him accurately portrayed, But he wasn't even in Mate Wong the day of the Mate Wong massacre. He was in Charleston, West Virginia at the Union headquarters. And so that part they got wrong. But the Mate Wong film's really pretty good. And I think they get largely a lot of it right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. You were born in West Virginia. Now, how did a West Virginia boy end up in Ohio?
Easy, across the river.
Oh.
Yeah, Mom and Dad moved. I found them about a year later when I got hungry.
Trying to feed you.
I used to tell people that. My mother got so mad that she's not around anymore. She passed away several years ago. But she used to get so mad when I'd tell people that.
That's good. I love it. I wish I'd come up with that one. We have bunches of them. You know, we'll move and not leave a forwarding address for the kids.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too. You know, we all know your interest in the West and the Western stuff, but you're also very much interested in Appalachia, and that is such a rich history and stuff.
Oh, big time.
And there's hardly enough written about it.
Yeah, big time.
Oh, I had a... I've got about 12, well, I've got more than that now, but I had, when I wrote that book, I had about 12 years of research into that book on Charles Lively. And of course, I knew about it mainly because I was a West Virginian and I had seen the film Mate Wong, and I became kind of curious about this guy. Another thing that really got me chasing after was the History Channel's feature on the McCoys and Hatfields and the McCoys. And honestly, that was a good part of West Virginia history. But honestly, I thought that isn't the most interesting thing in West Virginia. So I thought they'd had such success off of that. I thought if somebody wrote about Mate Wong and everything that happened there, they might do another one on that. And that's kind of what got me started really digging into it hard.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's do our very first commercial break here, since we're at that good spot. Here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Bob Yoho, R.G. Yoho, Western Writers of America author, is with us. And this is Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. We'll be back right after these very important messages. Stick around, please.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Did you ever try to borrow money on 1,000 acres of dust and sand?
No. Looks like you folks have a real problem here.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. R.G. Yoho is our guest, the Western Writers of America author. He's got a buttload of books out. We're going to talk about some of those books here in just a bit. But first, I thought some fiddle music would be appropriate since our guest is from the Appalachia area.
I mean, fiddle country.
Good music down there, man. I'll tell you what.
Hold down.
Yeah. There's some great stuff there that come out of the Appalachians, and a lot of that is from the Welsh and Scottish people who settled there.
The Northumberland, Scotland, and Ireland.
Yep. Yeah. So there you go.
In fact, there's a book out there I would recommend to anybody that wants to really understand the foundation of America. It's called Abion Seed. It's about 1,200 pages.
Yeah, that's that thick one that Abel gave you, right?
Yeah, and it's about the four waves of British colonization. And the fourth wave is the wave that settled Appalachia. Yeah. And one of the really most interesting things about that, all of the phraseology and the colloquialisms that we think of as cowboy and Western, they brought them over with them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, man, talk
about sure. Sure.
Along with their derby hats.
Yeah. And the Irish, you know. So, Bob, I got to ask you back to our previous conversation. Is Lively a hero, or was he doing his duty, or is he a murderer?
I'd say he's a murderer. Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that. He pretty well was... He passed himself off as one of the coal miners. Meanwhile, he was running a restaurant in downtown Matewan. The union headquarters was above the restaurant, and he was spying on them the whole time, making $225 a month from Baldwin Felts back in those days when nobody made that kind of money.
Yeah. Wow.
And he was also pretty much a killer. He killed Ed Chambers and Sid Hatfield on the courthouse steps in Welch, West Virginia on August 1st, 1921 at 10:30 in the morning and was acquitted in 51 minutes.
Wow.
You want to make sure you got the right family in the jury.
Yeah, for sure, huh? And you can't find a jury without any of those.
Well, you know, part of that, though, that was his job. Yeah.
Yeah. He was actually... He actually killed someone in Levada, Colorado in April 1914, exactly 8 days before the Ludlow Massacre. And two of the guards there while he was in jail, he confessed to the murder, and they put him in jail for 16 months. Albert Felts, who ran things out west for the Baldwin Felts Detective Agency, made sure he didn't get out of jail in Walsenburg, and kept him in jail for 6 months where he'd pump jail miners for information, feed it back out to the most corrupt sheriff, Jeff Farr, and he'd pass it back to the coal companies that were owned by John D. Rockefeller.
And, you know, they say the corruption today is, oh, we've never seen anything like this. That's why you need to read history.
That's how true.
The robber barons is what built America.
Well, there's no doubt corruption. About that. No doubt about that.
The corruption.
Yeah.
Without corruption, we'd still be in...
in the hills.
Boston, yeah. Anyway.
When the miners back, they had a strike in about 1914 in Paint Creek, or somewhere between 1912 and 1914 in Paint Creek and Cabin Creek, West Virginia. And they threw the miners, striking miners, out of their houses, put them in tents, and they put machine guns. Baldwin Felts put machine guns on one of the trains. They called it the Bull Moose Special. And it would drive down through there past the tents and strafe their tents with machine gun fire.
Yeah.
Those guns were imported out to Ludlow, Colorado, and were attached to a steel-lined car that would drive back and forth over the strike, past the striking miners' tents in Ludlow, Colorado, and strafe them.
Hmm.
And two of the Baldwin Phelps guards that died in the Make One massacre, Albert Phelps and I believe a man named Ferguson, they were two of the guys that brought the guns out there, and they died in Make One, West Virginia in 1920.
Well, you know, all they were doing was introducing air conditioning to the tents.
Right.
Yeah. And what was bad is the people then, to get away from the gunfire that was strafing the tents, they dug holes underneath their tents and covered them over with lumber. Well, then the Baldwin Phelps agency, and this is what happened in the Ludlow Massacre, they set fire to the tents, and the people were down in those holes to get away from the machine gun fire, and there were a bunch of women and children died down in there asphyxiated from the tents catching on fire.
Wow, that's something else.
Almost as bad as, not quite, but almost as bad as the nonsense that happened during the Bisbee riots in early 1900s when bunches of miners got hung.
Yeah, it's so interesting, you know, that so many of those events, how the U.S. Army or the state militias came in on the side of the big guns. And
I guess they kind of had to. I don't know.
Well, they were following orders.
Yeah, right. But whatever. Hey, as we're approaching America's 250th birthday, you've got a book out, RG, called America's History is His Story. Let's talk about that. What have you got for us?
Okay, I wrote that. That's the only book I ever wrote as a favor to someone. I had a friend that was starting a Christian radio station in West Union, West Virginia. And he wanted something to read on the radio every day of the year.
Mm.
And he wanted something that was historic or patriotic to read. And essentially I sat down and wrote that it's not like a daily devotional, except in the fact it has a reading for every day of the year, something historic or patriotic. And that's the only program on that radio station reading from my book this plays 365 days a year.
Wow. Are they still repeating it, or are they finished with it now?
Start the year old?
Yeah, he repeats it, runs back through it every year.
Okay.
He tried to get me to do 2 years, and I'm thankful I had brains enough to say I'd only do a year. He asked four or five, six other people to try it, and they'd get about a month, and they'd quit. I was the only one dumb enough to finish.
Give us an idea of some of the material that's contained within that book.
Oh, I wrote about General Washington and MacArthur. Also, you know, both of them wound up being shot at. And having bullets in their coats and never being hit by a bullet.
Right.
That happened to MacArthur and Vera Cruz, and it happened to Washington in the Indian battles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got a book at home. It's called The Cherokee Book of Days, and the lady that wrote it, last name is Sequeechee. And I read it. I've been, for about 5 or 6 years, I've gone through it every day of the year. It's got a little meditation. And it finishes up with a quotation from American Indian, something about whatever. You know, I've given you some in the past. But those are handy. They help you focus.
Focus. It's focus. Daily devotionals. Focus on what matters.
Yeah.
Yep. Todd?
So, here, you get on this journey and you start writing these people. For instance, just let's look at Lively. Do you find yourself feeling for him in some way? Do you find him? Did you have to work hard at not feeling for him, not trying to take his side, or try to, you know, just go into it with like an objective view?
I really did try to go into it with objective view as far as I could. I mean, I most of what I saw early on led me to think everything I was going to find was pretty bad. you know, you start, I actually started writing a book before I was, really felt like I was done researching, because, you know, research is kind of seductive, and if you're not mm-hmm. careful, you'll sit around and just research and research and keep doing it, and you'll never write the book that you sat down to plan to do.
Research till the cows come home.
That sounds like me.
Yeah, and so you, at some point, you just got to start writing, and I had made up my mind that I was going to write good or bad. You know, if he was a good guy, I was going to write. I didn't feel like I really had a horse in that race, so I just was going to try to tell the truth about him. I think it caused a little bit of unhappiness with some family members of his that were still alive, but they actually learned some things about the man from me that they didn't know.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's always more to the story than what, you know, history gives us.
As Paul Harvey used to say, now the rest of the story.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the Kellen Malone series. It sounds like it's been moneymaker.
That was actually one of the, Death Comes to Red Hawk was one of the first manuscripts I ever had published. And I had written that just really as a standalone book. And then that was many, many years ago I wrote that book. And I tried to get published, didn't have much luck at it. And I kind of threw it in the drawer. I wrote that probably when my daughter was about two or three. And then I just kind of threw it in the drawer and I about kind of raised a kid. When she was 19, I think I got it published. And I don't think my daughter had ever known that I'd ever written a Western up to that point.
That's funny.
So, well, you know,
it was a long while. And then when I decided to start writing again, I just liked those characters so well, I decided to write another one. And I never had planned it to be a series, but that's kind of how it came.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was reading through it on them and some of the backstories on them. And you really have a knack for creating a scenario that without being repetitive.
Well, thank you. That's probably the toughest thing you do is trying not to write the same book all the time.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the last book in the series, Palo Duro. That's supposed to be coming out pretty soon, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's I had all 9 Westerns that I'd written at the time in 2020 go out of print in one day when the publisher went out of business. I was a Western writer, didn't have one Western on the market.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That's got to be spooky.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, it was awful. But I finally got a publisher that would publish all my backlist titles along with anything I've written since then. And they've got this Palo Duro book, should come out this month. And that book was, that took my characters and really had them going into the old, going into the, well, the story about the lost gold in Palo Duro Canyon that's buried there. Mm-hmm. And that's a heck of a story.
Yeah, that's an important part of Texas history, you know, that whole Comanche stronghold up there.
Oh, yeah, you know, Charles Goodnight has a connection to it, and one of the last Comanche battles was fought around there. It's a fascinating place. A lot of history takes place right down that region.
Now, is that Return to Mate One? Is that one of the Malone stories, or is that something else?
Actually, that Return to Mate One is the book I wrote about Charles Lively before I found out really what happened to him, and it was a fictional work. And and when I did it, after I did it, I kind of thought I learned more about Lively and learned what actually happened to him. And really, I thought the fictional work that I did on Lively wasn't near as good as what his life was. Actually, I couldn't make up something as good as his life truly was.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. And that book has yet to come out. They're going to publish that early next year. And then that will be the final one of the 9 books that went out of print.
Hmm.
Back in for sale.
Okay. All right, we got to do our next commercial break here on AM.
AM?
Where the hell am I?
AM
on
radio?
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. I keep, if I throw out
flashback.
If I throw out some call letters, shoot me, okay? Oh, God. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. Our guest is Bob Yoho and Western author. We'll be back with much more after this. Stay tuned.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Was it you or Jeff here that plugged Tom Dillon in the back?
I didn't do it, Ma.
Somebody shoot Dillon?
You're not going to get away with it this time. You didn't give him the chance I'm going to give you. You are healed, so go for your guns.
I won't have no fighting.
Stand back and hold your horses. I come here for justice, not the kind you shorthorns deal out. Make your play.
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts, Bob Yoho is our guest. Man, that Hopalong Cassidy is one tough customer, eh?
I'll tell you what, when he gets serious, it's scary.
Watch out.
You look at all of the cowboy series heroes, you know.
Uh-huh.
And here's the old lovable Hoppy.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden he gets that steely eyed and that voice
smacks
changes,
somebody.
And it scares the crap out of a kid.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why they remember to wear their raincoats.
That's right. Hoppy says you kids better wear your raincoats because Hoppy will come get you.
I love those. All right. Bob Yoho, let's talk about the book here. Long Ride to Yesterday. That looks pretty good. It seems like it has one of those kinds of plots that lots of gunfighters have. They can't get away from their rep.
That was probably the third manuscript I ever wrote.
Wow.
I published most of them. That's probably the first one I ever wrote. I wouldn't let you hear again. But there's in Long Ride to Yesterday, there's a character named Gang Carson, and he's known for his fast gun, and he's known pretty well all over for it. But he settled a town and years ago, and he kind of walked away and kind of left the woman with a friend of his, you know, that he loved. And turned, you know, just kind of left because he thought it wasn't good to stay around. It was a typical trope, you know, where the gunfighter needed to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And 25 years later, the woman, they're having trouble in town again, and she tries to send him a letter and ask him to come back. Mm-hmm. And he comes back from, he's somewhere in Montana, comes back to Kansas where this all happened. And that's how the story starts.
Good premise.
Yeah, it is. A real good premise. I mean, there's movies about gunfighters who try to hang up the guns, and it just doesn't work.
No, there's always some punk kid.
Yeah. It's always some punk kid that wants
Skip
to...
Skip Holmeyer out there waiting to gun you down.
What was interesting about this game, Carson, that was another book I planned to do a standalone book on, but I actually brought him back. He appears in the Kel Malone books in book two of that five book series,
mm-hmm.
and so he came back there again, and you wouldn't have to read the one book to know that kind of explains who he is, but I actually liked him so much as a character, I actually brought him into one of the Kellen Malone books, and I really enjoyed that.
How tough is that to bring a character from a past book into a current book? Is it tough?
It takes a little care. I don't think it's all that tough, but you don't give the whole story of everything that happens, but mm-hmm. you're trying to hint at it a little bit, or somebody wants to know exactly what happened, then go back and read the other books.
But mm-hmm.
I try to write my books in such a way that if you never saw one of the other ones, it's a complete story. I don't much like the people that write books and you don't ever finish one. You've got to read all the books in the series to know what happens mm-hmm. with them. And mine would be more kind of like the old episodes of the TV show where it's complete show every week, and that's the way I write my books.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. You think about with TV, especially a series that runs for years, the very first Paladin, he only knows so much about the character. Every actor kind of does a backstory. But as the stories progress and the writers come along, all of a sudden people and things, events that as the actor you never knew happened are all of a sudden part of his backstory.
Well, like the...
And you got to work him in.
Like the episode of when Paladin became Paladin.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, here he was just some punk guy off the street.
It's a challenge, you think about it.
Actually, in this Paladuro book that's getting ready to come out, there's a character in my Kellen Malone series named Joe Clements, also known as Skull Clements, and he gives some backstory to one of the characters in here from one of his books, talks about his childhood, well, when he was just a young man and when he came west and why he came west, and I really spell out a lot about Skull Clements, which is kind of a mystery character in my books, and to learn a little bit more about him in this Paladuro.
That's interesting. Hiding some of the character things so that you can bring them out again at a later point.
Well, think about this. Moore created a dynasty of Sacketts and relatives and cousins and nieces and uncles and people that lived across the street.
Yeah. All right, Bob, for the $64 question, what do you think about AI writing?
I despise it.
Good for you.
I would never use it. I've went online and on my Facebook page and told my readers and people that read my books that I won't ever use AI to create the work. Look, AI doesn't create. It goes out. It steals. It takes all the best work of good past writers, and it takes all their work and kind of jumbles it together in some kind of stew and creates something that really isn't new. It's just stuff that's stolen from everybody else, and I think AI is terrible.
Yeah. Could be monkey see, monkey do.
Could be plagiarism, could it not?
It is, yeah. But, you know, there's several suits out there now.
Yeah.
So, Bob, I have to ask you, you know, you're talking about AI, but also, you know, as Bunker said, L'Amour created all these characters. We had his wife on the show. And every summer, they'd get in the car and drive around the West.
Yeah.
And that's where he got a lot of his inspiration. Where do you get your inspiration? Is it from, like, you know, Jackie Gleason got all his inspiration for all the characters on The Honeymooners. He said it was simple. I grew up with all these people. They lived in the same apartment building with me.
Yeah.
Where do you get your inspiration? Where do you, is it one character and then you work outwards? Or how do you go about it?
Pretty much one character and I work outwards from it. I go, of course, I go west every year. Well, I come out at least once a year where I go out to the West Writers Convention. They move it all over the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually try to spend some time before or after, maybe both, looking at the area and the geography. And I've ridden a lot of horses out west. I've seen the West. I try every time I come out there to go horseback riding somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of that country between the ears of a horse, which is kind of puts you in the way your characters need to see it. And I've ridden horses in the Black Hills and Alaska, Tucson. I've been a little bit of everywhere.
Damn.
Yeah, and don't forget the book fair here every year.
Yeah.
And I haven't been there for a couple of years, but yeah, and I really enjoy that book fair out there.
Well, you know,
thank you. I appreciate it.
I want to just back up for a second because you were talking about your comments on AI, and I actually saw that Facebook post there, and I thought it was well spoken.
Yeah, I actually lifted a little bit of dialogue from one of my books that's going to come out later this year where I talk about AI. I actually make AI part of that book and what happens. And so that's kind of, and I had a few lines of dialogue that I lifted and just posted on that post. I pretty much had my thoughts about AI.
And AI's going to be pissed.
I just happen to think, you know, Westworld was in a sense
AI.
It was a look at the future, which was AI. We just didn't realize.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into some.
I have.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you hosted for about 4 years a weekly radio talk show. What did you talk about for 4 years?
Actually, it was I talked about politics mostly. It was a political broadcast, and I did a lot of that. I actually wrote. I was a freelance writer for the editorial page of the local newspaper in Parkersburg, West Virginia, for several years.
Well, you know, I got sucked in. I always go down the rabbit hole, and I got sucked into your TikTok site. And you must have a couple of thousand comments on there. But that was a hoot. You know, they're all, it's real, you know, around a minute or something. But they really, you know, it's like he really has a way of hitting the nail right on the head and, hit, you know, burying it with the first stroke and not having to repeat.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I did a lot of that, so you know, I kind of started writing politics, and I'm still kind of keep my feet in a little bit.
Have you got any Western politic books coming up? You know, where the hero's a politician, or the bad guy's a politician, and the hero's out to correct him.
Well, that book that I've got coming out later this year has a little bit of political intrigue in it. It's actually called Bad Chemistry, Trouble in Tucson. And strangely enough, it's a book about a guy that works in a chemical plant that writes westerns.
Okay. Oh.
Well, what do you know about that?
Well, I had 40 years in two different chemical plants, 26 in one, 14 in another, and I've been anywhere from a lab technician to a process operator, so far, I'm kind of happy I got out of there before anything blew up.
Yeah, for sure. You know. Now, do you glow in the dark?
No, I don't think so. Actually, strangely enough, my health's been better since I got out. I had
I wonder why.
Issues. I had some stomach and intestinal issues and stuff, and breathing and coughing issues. About all of them have gone away since I got out of there a couple of years ago.
Good for you, and you're in the fine, clear air down in the Ohio Valley and West Virginia area there. We got to do our finish up our commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. R.G. Yoho is our guest. We'll be right back after this.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
I got a wire telespatch for you. Look here for you. Good news. It's good news.
Good news?
Yeah.
Pancho, if this telegram is for me, how do you know what's in it?
Well, I know what's in it because I look at it through the corner of one eye. It's just like we see.
Pancho.
This is the Voices of the West.
Gonna croon beneath the Texas moon while I strum my old guitar in the night.
We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. RG, Bob Yoho is our guest. Western Writers of America author, and enjoy a little Patsy Montana.
Patsy Montana.
Thank you, Patsy.
Patsy Pitsy?
Oh boy, I'll tell you what. It's no wonder I live the way I live after my career.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to just share something here for a second, because Bob and our founder Emil, they share a commonality, and that is that they're both Branding Iron Award winners, and that, you know, for that's pretty damn impressive. You know, it makes me feel good that Emil's in good company, or Bob's in good company. I don't know, somebody's in company.
That award was quite an honor. It's given for service to Western Writers of America, and I am really proud to be a part of it. I'm really surprised they let me run the spur contest. I don't really understand why they trust anything to me if they knew me that well. But I'm starting my fifth year in it this year, and it's a great honor. It's a storied tradition the Western Writers has, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
I like the way they do that, too. It's not like you've got this one panel. Each award has its own panel, and I think that is the only way to do it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Good idea.
I have to...
Go ahead.
I have to recuse myself from any categories I enter, and I had to do that last year at Juvenile Fiction, but I don't make any decisions on the ones that I enter. I don't enter that many, though.
All right. All right, so the final question that we have for all of our guests, which is the most important one that we delegate to Todd Roberts to ask.
All right, Bob, here it is. I know that you will be judged negatively if you answer incorrectly. Your favorite film or television Western?
My favorite Western would probably be, I wouldn't have said this years ago, True Grit.
All right.
True Grit.
Which one?
Without doubt.
Yeah,
which one?
Yeah.
Which one?
The John Wayne one.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, this is kind of a loaded question, because I think you've got, a list of 50 reviews of Westerns that you've watched, because I watched some of those, and, you know, it's like, I have to agree with you, Wind River is one of the great modern Westerns of all time.
Oh, it's a super movie. I was so impressed by that. My wife and I went and saw it. I thought, my heavens, that's a great film.
Yeah. And it's a messy film, because, you know, there's no easy answer, there's no, you know, quick resolve. It's still open ended when it's over.
That's a mess with all the missing women from these reservations. That's a sad thing.
Yeah.
So, Bob, any of your books that you would like to see turned into movies?
All of them. Get those royalties coming.
I get asked that all the time. Truth is, I'd be nice for any of them, but a lot of times the book doesn't wind up being just like the way you wrote it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, for sure.
But at least the interest in it being made into a movie or a film causes the book to sell more copies, which is great for the author. Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right, time for self-promotion. What's going on with you? And how can people find you?
You can find me at RG Yoho, R as in Robert, G as in George, Y-O-H-O, RG Yoho at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Yahoo!
And nothing big time coming up?
I'm writing I want to write number 6 in the Kel Malone series, and I'm going to get started on that pretty soon, but I'm not getting too busy in anything with the Westerners Convention coming up here in June.
Right, okay. All right.
Well, you got to work them longhorns in there now. Yeah. You know, because you got.
Yeah, I love them longhorns. That's fun.
The Ohio Longhorns.
Yeah, we had Jane Botkins on here just recently, and you know she's got the book on the Mrs. Chisholm out now, and there's a lot of Longhorn stuff in there because she was very instrumental in help saving them.
Yeah, I want to see a novel about the Ohio Longhorns. Let's drive those Ohio Longhorns.
What football team is that?
Be a new Rawhide. Rawhide.
Actually, the best Longhorns in the country are right in Barnesville, Ohio.
Oh,
the guy that was raising them moved from Colorado to Ohio because the land was cheaper and the taxes were lower.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go figure.
You know, it's an interesting side note, and you probably already know this, but the buffalo up in northern Arizona, they're not true buffalo. They're actually part cattle. Their DNA is not pure.
Okay. Bob, we are plumb out of time. Thank you much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it very much so. And we got to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, man, we've got to
have you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we got to have you back at some point in the not too distant future. Next time we get together here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, I have no idea what we're doing.
I thought you had something.
Well, I had something, but then the guy had to go to the hospital, so
we don't have that.
So we'll figure out something. Not to worry.
Not to worry. Well, are we ready for the countdown?
Oh, yeah. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. Thanks again for listening, folks.
78, 79. 80 O's, all you longhorns that Bob Yoho just gotten. I hope you can sell some meat because I'm hungry. I need a steak.
There you go. So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West.